Chapter 5. Where he is at the other several times, to lodge and entertain the late King William of glorious memory in his returning from Holland by way of Harwich to London. Their recorder is Earl Coper, who has been twice Lord High Chancellor of England. But his lordship not residing in those parts has put in for his deputy, Price Esquire Barrister at Law, and who dwells in the town. There are in Colchester 8 churches besides those which are damaged, and 5 meeting houses, whereof 2 Quakers, besides a Dutch church and a French church. Public edifices are 1. Bay Hall, an ancient society kept up for ascertaining the manufacture of bays, which are, or ought to be, all brought to this hall to be viewed, and sealed according to their goodness by the masters. And to this practice has been owing the great reputation of the Colchester bays in foreign markets, where to open the side of a bale, and show the seal has been enough to give the buyer a character of the value of the goods without any further search. And so far as they abate the integrity and exactness of their method, which I am told of late is much omitted, I say, so far, that reputation will certainly abate in the markets they go to, which are principally in Portugal and Italy. This corporation is governed by a particular set of men who are called governors of the Dutch Bay Hall, and in the same building is the Dutch Church. 2. The Guildhall of the town, called by them the Moot Hall, to which is annexed the town gaol. 3. The workhouse, being lately enlarged, and to which belongs a corporation, or a body of the inhabitants, consisting of 60 persons incorporated by Act of Parliament Anno 1698 for taking care of the poor. They are incorporated by the name and title of the governor, deputy governor, assistants, and guardians of the poor of the town of Colchester. They are in number 48, to whom are added the mayor and aldermen for the time being, who are always guardians by the same charter. These make the number of 60, as above. There is also a grammar free school, with a good allowance to the master, who is chosen by the town. 4. The castle of Colchester is now become only a monument showing the antiquity of the place, it being built as the walls of the town also are, with Roman bricks, and the Roman coins dug up here, and plowed up in the fields adjoining, confirm it. The inhabitants boast much that Helena, the mother of Constantine the Great, first Christian emperor of the Romans, was born there, and it may be so for aught we know. I only observe what Mr. Camden says of the castle of Colchester, viz. : in the middle of this city, stands a castle ready to fall with age. Though this castle has stood 120 years from the time Mr. Camden wrote that account, and it has not fallen yet, nor will another 120 years, I believe, make it look one jot the older. And it was observable, that in the late siege of this town, a common shot, which the besiegers made at this old castle, were so far from making it fall, that they made little, or no impression upon it. For which reason, it seems, and because the garrison made no great use of it against the besiegers, they fired no more at it. There are 2 charity schools set up here, and carried on by a generous subscription, with very good success. The title of Colchester is in the family of Earl Rivers, and the eldest son of that family is called Lord Colchester, though as I understand, the title is not settled by the creation to the eldest son till he enjoys the title of Earl with it, but that the other is by the courtesy of England. However, this I take ad referendum. From Colchester I took another step down to the coast. The land running out a great way into the sea, south and southeast makes that promontory of land called the Naze, and well known to seamen using the northern trade. Here one sees a sea open as an ocean without any opposite shore, though it be no more than the mouth of the Thames. This point called the Naze, and the northeast point of Kent, near Margate, called the North for land, making what they call the mouth of the river and the port of London, though it be here above 60 miles over. At Walton under the Naze they find on the shore Capira stone in great quantities, and there are several large works called Capira's houses, where they make it with great expense. On this promontory is a new mark erected by the Trinity House men, and at the public expense, being a round brick tower, near 80 feet high. The sea gains so much upon the land here by the continual winds at southwest, that within the memory of some of the inhabitants there they have lost above 30 acres of land in one place. From hence we go back into the county about 4 miles, because of the creeks which lie between, and then turning east again come to Erich, on the utmost eastern point of this large country. Erich is a town so well known, and so perfectly described by many writers, I need say little of it. It is strong by situation, and may be made more so by art. But it is many years since the government of England have had any occasion to fortify towns to the landward. It is enough that the harbor or road, which is one of the best and securest in England, is covered at the entrance by a strong fort and a battery of guns to the seaward, just as at Tilbury, and which sufficiently defend the mouth of the river. And there is a particular felicity in this fortification, viz., that though the entrance or opening of the river into the sea is very wide, especially at high water, at least 2 miles, if not 3 over, yet the channel, which is deep, and in which the ships must keep and come to the harbor, is narrow, and lies only on the side of the fort, so that all the ships which come in, or go out must come close under the guns of the fort, that is to say, under the command of their shot. The fort is on the Suffolk side of the bay or entrance, but stands so far into the sea upon the point of a sand or shoal, which runs out toward the Essex side, as it were, laps over the mouth of that haven like a blind to it, and our surveyors of the country affirm it to be in the county of Essex. The making this place, which was formerly no other than a sand in the sea, solid enough for the foundation of so good a fortification, has not been done, but by many years' labor, often repairs, and an infinite expense of money, but it is now so firm, that nothing of storms and high tides, or such things as make the sea dangerous to these kind of works, can affect it. The harbor is of a vast extent, for, as two rivers empty themselves here, viz., Stour from Manningtree and the Orwell from Ipswich, the channels of both are large and deep, and safe for all weathers. So where they join they make a large bay or road able to receive the biggest ships, and the greatest number, that ever the world saw together, I mean ships of war. In the old Dutch war great use has been made of this harbor, and I have known that there has been 100 sail of men of war and their attendants, and between 300 and 400 sail of collier ships all in this harbor at a time, and yet none of them crowding or riding in danger of one another. Erich is known for being the port where the packet boats, between England and Holland, go out and come in. The inhabitants are far from being famed for good usage to strangers, but, on the contrary, are blamed for being extravagant in their reckonings in the public houses, which has not a little encouraged the setting up of sloops, which they now call passage boats, to Holland, to go directly from the River Thames. This, though it may be something the longer passage, yet as they are said to be more obliging to passengers, and more reasonable in the expense, and, as some say, also, the vessels are better sea boats, has been the reason why so many passengers do not go or come by the way of Erich as formerly were wont to do. Insomuch that the stage coaches between this place and London, which ordinarily went twice or three times a week, are now entirely laid down, and the passengers are left to hire coaches on purpose, take post horses, or hire horses to Colchester, as they find most convenient. The account of a petrifying quality in the earth here, though some will have it to be in the water of a spring hard by, is very strange. They boast that their town is walled, and their streets paved with clay, and yet that one is as strong, and the other as clean as those that are built or paved with stone. The fact is indeed true, for there is a sort of clay in the cliff, between the town and the Beacon Hill adjoining, which, when it falls down into the sea, where it is beaten with the waves and the weather, turns gradually into stone. But the chief reason assigned is from the water of a certain spring or well, which, rising in the said cliff, runs down into the sea among those pieces of clay, and petrifies them as it runs, and the force of the sea often stirring, and perhaps turning, the lumps of clay, when storms of wind may give force enough to the water, causes them to harden everywhere alike. Otherwise those which were not quite sunk in the water of the spring, would be petrified but in part. These stones are gathered up to pave the streets and build the houses, and are indeed very hard. It is also remarkable, that some of them taken up before they are thoroughly petrified will, upon breaking them, appear to be hard as a stone without, and soft as clay in the middle, whereas others that have lain a due time shall be thorough stone to the center, and as exceeding hard within as without. The same spring is said to turn wood into iron. But this I take to be no more or less than the quality, which, as I mentioned of the shore at the Naze, is found to be in much of the stone all along this shore, viz. Of the Capyrus kind. And it is certain, that the Capyrus stone, so called, is found in all that cliff, and even where the water of this spring has run. And I presume, that those who call the hardened pieces of wood, which they take out of this well by the name of iron, never tried the quality of it with the fire or hammer. If they had, perhaps they would have given some other account of it. On the promontory of land which they call Beacon Hill, and which lies beyond or behind the town towards the sea, there is a lighthouse, to give the ships directions in their sailing by as well as their coming into the harbor in the night. I shall take notice of these again altogether, when I come to speak of the Society of Trinity House, as they are called, by whom they are all directed upon this coast. This town was erected into a marquisate in honor of the truly glorious family of Schomberg, the eldest son of Duke Schomberg, who landed with King William, being styled Marquis of Harwich. But that family in England, at least, being extinct, the title dies also. Harwich is a town of hurry and business, not much of gaiety and pleasure, yet the inhabitants seem warm in their nests, and some of them are very wealthy. There are not many, if any, gentlemen or families of note either in the town or very near it. They send two members to Parliament. The present are Sir Peter Parker and Humphrey Parsons Esquire, and now being at the extremity of the county of Essex, of which I have given you some view, as to that side next the sea only, I shall break off this part of my letter by telling you, that I will take the towns which lie more towards the center of the county, in my return by the north and west part only, that I may give you a few hints of some towns which were near me in my route this way, and of which being so well known there is but little to say. On the road from London to Colchester, before I came into it at Witham, lie four good market towns at equal distance from one another, namely, Romford, noted for two markets, viz. One for calves and hogs, the other for corn and other provisions, most, if not all, bought up for London market. At the farther end of the town, in the middle of a stately park, stood Guldy Hall, vulgarly Giddy Hall, an ancient seat of one Coke, sometime Lord Mayor of London, but forfeited on some occasion to the crown. It is since pulled down to the ground, and there now stands a noble stately fabric or mansion house, built upon the spot by Sir John Iles, a wealthy merchant of London, and chosen sub-governor of the South Sea Company immediately after the ruin of the former sub-governor and directors, whose overthrow makes the history of these times famous. Brentwood and Ingatestone, and even Chelmsford itself, have very little to be said of them, but that they are large thoroughfare towns, full of good inns, and chiefly maintained by the excessive multitude of carriers and passengers which are constantly passing this way to London with droves of cattle, provisions, and manufactures for London. The last of these towns is indeed the county town, where the county gaol is kept, and where the assizes are very often held. It stands on the conflux of two rivers, the Chelmer, whence the town is called, and the Can. But Lee's, or Lee's Priory, as some call it, is to be seen an ancient house in the middle of a beautiful park, formerly the seat of the late Duke of Manchester, but since the death of the Duke it is sold to the Duchess Dowager of Buckinghamshire, the present Duke of Manchester retiring to his ancient family seat at Kimbolton in Huntingdonshire, it being a much finer residence. His Grace is lately married to a daughter of the Duke of Montagu by a branch of the House of Marlborough. Four market towns fill up the rest of this part of the country: Dunmo, Braintree, Thaxted, and Coggeshall, all noted for the manufacture of bays, as above, and for very little else, except I shall make the ladies laugh at the famous old story of the flitch of bacon at Dunmo, which is this. One Robert Fitzwalter, a powerful baron in this county in the time of Henry III, on some merry occasion, which is not preserved in the rest of the story, instituted a custom in the priory here, that whatever married man did not repent of his being married, or quarrel or differ and dispute with his wife within a year, and a day after his marriage, and would swear to the truth of it, kneeling upon two hard-pointed stones in the churchyard, which stones he caused to be set up in the priory churchyard for that purpose, the prior and convent, and as many of the town as would, to be present, such person should have a flitch of bacon. I do not remember to have read that anyone ever came to demand it, nor do the people of the place pretend to say, of their own knowledge, that they remember any that did so. A long time ago several did demand it, as they say, but they know not who. Neither is there any record of it, nor do they tell us, if it were now to be demanded, who is obliged to deliver the flitch of bacon, the priory being dissolved and gone. The forest of Epping and Hainault spreads a great part of this country still. I shall speak again of the former in my return from this circuit. Formerly, it is thought, these two forests took up all the west and south part of the county. But particularly we are assured, that it reached to the river Chelmer, and into Denji Hundred, and from thence again west to Epping and Waltham, where it continues to be a forest still. Probably this forest of Epping has been a wild, or forest ever since this island was inhabited, and may show us, in some parts of it, where enclosures and tillage has not broken in upon it, what the face of this island was before the Romans' time. That is to say, before their landing in Britain. The constitution of this forest is best seen, I mean as to the antiquity of it, by the merry grant of it from Edward the Confessor before the Norman conquest to Randolph Pepperking, one of his favorites, who was after called Peveril, and whose name remains still in several villages in this county, as particularly that of Hatfield Peveril, in the road from Chelmsford to Witham, which is supposed to be originally a park, which they called a field in those days, and Hartfield may be as much as to say a park for doer, for the stags were in those days called harts, so that this was neither more nor less than Randolph Pepperking's Hartfield, that is to say, Ralph Peveril's Deer Park. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.